Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy.
The number one fuckboy.
The number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me.
The number one fuckboy, bitch. Been watching too much Freddy Krueger lately. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout out. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, first time guest, long time friend from Murph Meyer is self-medicated. It's Murph Meyer. What up, Murph?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me. That was a phenomenal.
I feel bad for the listeners of High and Mighty because they've heard me say this post script 11 times. I do have new upstairs neighbors who are working from home, and they are loving it.
Oh, I imagine it's like a mix of WWF and Drive Time Radio.
That's pretty much you also describe my sense of humor right there. Kind of 50-50 between classic WWF Attitude Era WWF and Opie and Anthony.
Yep, Macho Man and O&A, that's exactly
yeah, that's all I need. Ooh, brother. It's always, I have no qualms about what I do for a living. I love it until I'm like in the driveway. My neighbor's like, hey, do you do a radio show or something from downstairs? And I'm like, I heard you screaming a bunch of curse words and stuff. I'm like, yeah, sorry. I know you're like a medical professional FaceTiming with your patients.
You're like, I just wanted to make sure, yeah, you weren't having a psychotic episode or if you're speaking to someone in particular.
No, I have no, it's my job. I make almost $900 a month doing it. So please back off. Don't take this away from me right now. Murph, this is so fucking exciting that you're doing this. We haven't spoken. We started catching up way too hard on the Zoom, and I was like, no. Fucking contentize this. This is content.
Yes, do not shoot the wad in the pre-talk. Yes.
Yeah, you were revealing dark secrets. You're talking about working with Travolta, all this fucking twisted ass shit, your time in Scientology. I'm like, oh, yep. Man, we should have recorded some of this.
That's it for me.
And you're like, actually, now I got to run. If I could just plug my live stream, get out of here. Leave 4 minutes in. We just did 56 minutes of fucking awesome fucking dialogue, and they were like, action. What's going on with you? You're doing these. I called it medicated because I keep saying self-educated. Murph is self-medicated, which That's is sort true. Of something I've known about you for a long time. Is that you are legendary storyteller. You have a bunch of wild ass stories. A lot of them, stem from your former life as an addict and your current life as a more socially acceptable addict. Correct?
That's a beautiful phrasing, man. That's exactly what it is. Because I feel like a lot of the, a former heroin addict, current alcoholic is kind of how I phrase it. And I think a lot of people, and you see a lot of people
would go, congratulations, like good right? work. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You're progressing. You're evolving as a human. Yeah. I think that's the kind of framing that I think is a little bit different where we see, there's a lot of podcasts out there about addiction and you know, people's struggles with their substance use. But it's all, a lot of it's in the past tense. A lot of it's, you know, in the more abstinence based program, treatment, recovery kind of thing. And so I think this is a little bit different where it's, you know, there's a whole movement, harm reduction movement is kind of, you know, a thing that's gaining a lot more mainstream attention than it ever has before. And it's just, you know, it's just the idea that you're, you know, you're doing the best you can kind of to get through and minimizing the more harmful drug use. And so for me, that was just shooting up heroin for years. And I was like, this is not one I can manage. And I don't know.
Famously, it's unmanageable. Like yeah. Very few people are functioning heroin addicts. Yeah,
that's true. That's
you don't,
the truth.
You don't hear that the word functioning used as a modifier for heroin addicts.
Absolutely not. No. So, I, you know, it's just booze and weed for me now with the occasional psychedelics and amphetamines as needed. That's my self-prescription.
But there is an element, like you're saying something interesting here, because it was like sex and drugs for a long time, and we're around similar age. Our generation growing up was like, say no, do nothing, it's bad. And that's the kind of shit that makes people curious. And lying, straight up lying, kids hearing lies, whether it's about mythical figures that bring you presents, your parents' own history, the justifications for their rules and groundings. Any lie that you're told as a kid is a fucking Rosetta Stone for chipping away at trusting the adult world, period. So I mean,
after I found that little fib out, my spiraled. I was like, I don't trust anything. Like,
yeah, it's a fucking barometer. Then you're like, what else has my mom been lying about? What else have my parents been lying about? And you can forgive them for like Christmas or like, well, the benefit was I was getting gifts and they were getting me to behave. But when you're like, hear from adults the your whole time about how dangerous and how bad sex is, but from everyone else you hear how amazing it is, you have a hard time. But if your parents, and I'm a childless 40-year-old fucking comedian, so like, take this. But I just think a lot more open dialogue, and I, this is what I appreciate about guys like you, who I know, even outside of comedy, you're just truthful and forthcoming, which is why I think you and I have always gotten along, is because that's two things we pride ourselves on. It's just like, this is how I actually feel, you know, judge me.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, and you're more than likely right that I am gross and I am wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong there. I'm just being frank. So like, I just always feel like if your parents explain to you like, well, you know, like if my mom would have been like, my mom and dad, who were drinking and smoking pot and were doing way worse drugs before they had me, were sort of like, and I think they were, because they had to have known I was partying on the weekends. I'm in high school. You can't like leave for 2 5-hour shifts and come home drunk. And your parents, like, and my parents weren't, you know, parents of the 80s and 90s. Not there a lot. Working weekends, working nights. So some excuses. But if they just have that talk, if your parents have a talk with you, it's like, it's bad. Like, don't go too heavy down this shit. And like, yes, everyone in your school is drinking, but like, you remember, it's a Friday and Saturday night thing. Or, you know, make sure you still have your responsibilities. I want you to be able to get home safe. Never get in a car with a driver. You know, you don't have to drink another. Like, there's no pressure to it. If you don't want to drink at all, you don't have to. Like, those dialogues aren't had. You're only armed with like, it's bad. And then when every cool kid in your school and every hot girl and every handsome dude is all drinking and smoking weed, and you're like, and I'm not supposed to. I feel like popularity might be right here.
Sure. Sometimes the popular, also to just say no. And you mentioned too, it's like we're our generation, the classic brain on drugs kind of thing. Like the PSA is always talk to your kids about drugs, but don't just talk to them like fear monger your kids about drugs.
Right.
And it didn't work. I don't know if you had the DARE program. What a nightmare that, what a fucking joke that thing was.
We were talking about this on Action Boys. Rogers called it out. It's like everyone remembers that like thing that they laid out, and it was just the coolest. It was Coke next to pot, next to like a whiskey handle, next to like a gun, a knife, a mirror, like condoms. It was just like, this is a party fucking tray, dude.
Yes. As soon as the teacher leaves the room and leaves you with like Officer Dan, who's like breath stinks of a liqueur, you're just like, oh, okay. So now it's time to party, right? Let's lock that door. Yeah.
Tell me more about this Acapulco gold, brother. How do I get my hands on Blue Devils and Yellow Jackets?
Yes, tell me more. Do you have a pager number I can beep?
And this was like 1990 92 to 96 is when I'm in like junior high and high school, like 94 to 2000. And you're seeing a lot of that shit. And even when you're a kid, you're like, this is outdated. This is wrong. No kid says Acapulco Gold. No kid takes barbiturates yet. And meanwhile, at my school at the time, like this is Long Island in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like a kid is like, I twisted my knee. They're like, okay, well, here's a year and a half worth of Oxycontin. This ought to get your knee better. And then it's like, hey, say no to barbiturates. It's like, wait a minute. What are the fucking rules here, man?
Yeah. The prescription pads with the guy in the white coat he's real loose with that script pad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need to look out for someone selling me some Acapulco Gold in an alleyway. Yeah. It's funny because I feel like that whole, and also just the bottom line with that shit is we've now seen that it was absurd at the time, like you said, and I think we kind of knew it, but we also now have we've got a whole generation to look at, and it just doesn't work.
Right.
Like, no matter what, even if your goal is to be puritanical and to try to be like, no sex, no drug. I mean, that shit just didn't work. Obviously overdoses are flying off. Like you said, the oxys, everyone's on something. And so I feel like that entire mentality, instead of just kind of, you know, even from the literal standpoint, reducing the harm with like harm reduction of the actual lives people are going to live, and you know, they're going to live, then we all human beings do, you know, we do what we want to do. So, and especially when you tell us not to, that's just, you know, most of us kind of have that personality to varying degrees. So I feel like it just didn't work, and it was costly. The whole punitive thing, the war on drugs is just, it's a nightmare. It's not the right way to deal with this. And
yeah, it's not the right way to deal with it's people having personal problems. It's addiction is something you're going through. Problem is not necessarily the right word, but it's something you're experiencing. It's like a state of being that's hard. And then like the way, like, even like your friends who are cops or people you know who are cops are like, yeah, what? How was work last night? Crazy. Had to arrest this lunatic. Oh, what was happening? They were like laying in the lobby of their building screaming bloody murder. It's like, oh, they were going through an emotional disturbance or like a drug-related hallucination. Yeah, yep. Well, you know, yep. We locked them up. It's like, how frequently did you hear that? And like on the remove the police from it, how frequently do you like, there's someone stressing everyone in the neighborhood out, and it's like, oh, I think they're going through something. And then the way we approach that is make that illegal, criminalize yes. that yep. rather sure. than like find out what we can do to help this person.
Yeah. I think it's funny because it's easier. And the whole justification has always been for the war on drugs is the funding, and kind of just keep jacking up billions and billions of dollars every year they're spending. And it's like, they always say, well, and some of it goes to treatment, but in the reality is very little of it goes to treatment, and the treatment that it goes to is also punitive in a way. So
yeah, it's treatment at prison frequently.
Right. Yeah. And you get a hot urine, and it's like, well, yeah, the guards, there's plenty of drugs to do here while you're here.
Right.
And we're just going to keep you here because you're just going to keep fucking having a hot piss. Like, you know, that's just the way that goes. So it's been a very, very ineffective, to say the least. And also obviously the toll it takes on certain communities with the whole crack thing of like the mandatory minimum sentencing and all that shit is like certain drugs then become.
Yeah. And like the three strikes thing where, you know, like the third strike could be, you know, open container or whatever. Yeah. It could be something yes. that is not worthy of 8 years of prison.
Right. Right. Yeah. No,
it's the third time you get caught with a blunt in your car is a decade in jail. That feels yeah. wrong. That feels like a bad rule, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's that one. Chalk that up. That one up to a shit rule. And yeah, it's like, yeah. I mean, even just the stigma behind it too is like that's the other reason why, you know. And each person has their own thing. So I've had, you know, a lot of people in my family in AA and kind of the 12-step abstinence thing. And you know, there's the thing I also like about harm reduction is it's all inclusive. So if abstinence is kind of your goal and that's what you're working towards, then that's also totally fine. It's just kind of, that's been the mainstream, that's been the predominant way of dealing with people using drugs. And I think that's the other thing that it even leads to people within the drug using community, especially we're talking about more hard drugs, is that there's this still, you know, even within that, there's looking down on people like, well, but these drugs are, you know, those are gutter drugs. Like you yeah. do those, you know, here but this stuff is maybe okay that you can kind of work through, and maybe you had a hard time at you know, at your job as a, you know, hedge fund manager or whatever it was, you did some cocaine. But if you do any crack, you do any meth, do any heroin, get in the trailer park, get the hell out of here or go to jail, you know?
Right. Yeah. There. And it's that whole, it's this like stereotype of the drugs. It's all you saying harm reduction is just like, I mean, yes, that's a big thing. That's on a small scale. This could mean things like the clean needle program or like getting people on methadone or getting something on. It's not as, and would you say it includes even, and this is something, and this is all anecdotal based on just being a 40-year-old man who lives in California and has been through the ringer. I see a lot of guys and gals I know who drank hard for 10 to 25 years who are now not drinking or minimally drinking or cold turkey, but smoking weed. And I even know a lot of people who went through the program, 12 steps, and then like, well now, like, just legendary guys. I'm like, this guy is like, when he was 14 was like, you know, fist fighting a cop. And now he's like, drinks two root beers and smokes a bowl every night. And it's like that level of harm reduction where you're like, is that included where maybe for some people that is a worse drug because it can get you pinged for failing a drug test. But for some people it's like, I don't smoke weed and drive. You know, I don't yell at my wife when I'm high. I don't fuck, you know, I don't make insanely bad choices. So for someone that could be a better experience.
Absolutely. You just, yeah, you chug root beer and binge the Golden Girls. Like that's that's the I mean, that's my dream anyhow. I'm such a Blanche.
I'll see you on the lanai, Murph.
Yes. Roll that blunt. We'll see you on the lanai. Yeah. That is part of it. I mean, I think, and again, like a lot of the problems, a lot of the harms that come from that sort of use, we just keep, you know, keeps going back to the punitive nature of it. So it's like, again, there's always this like, well, what's the harm? Well, you could go to jail. And you're like, well, we could stop doing that. And then that harm would be completely removed from the situation. I think you do see that with a lot. I think green, what the hell is it called? Green, clean and green, clean. I don't know. But yeah, there's a whole kind of, you know, philosophy of just weed, especially now that it's becoming more, you know, accessible. I mean, California, except, yeah. I think a lot of people are in that boat of like, yeah, especially from the hard drinking crowd. Yeah. It's like, yeah, no more fist fights, no more, you know.
It feels like a natural weird, and again, this is so specific to me, so it's very myopic, but it also feels like a natural New York to California transition where in New York, it's like, I have 3 hours to kill in between things. There are 7 bars on this street. I'm like, might as well. And meanwhile, in California, it's like, yeah, there's no parking at that bar. All right, I'm just going to get high and watch a movie. On my, you know, I'm just going to get high and sit in my backyard or whatever. I'm going to get high and go for a hike.
Yeah, so New York's still a boozier city. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, because it's not really an outdoorsy city, which is a good spot for smoking weed. Like, outdoorsy pairs well with weed, I feel like. And then you don't have to carry a handle or take 12 pisses while you're on a hike because you had 8 tall boys or whatever.
But yep.
It certainly worked for me on a smaller scale. I was a drink 5 to 7 nights a week guy for a long ass time. Then I was then I was like two nights a week of partying and then a couple of bourbons a night kind of guy. Then I was like, okay, no drinking at home, just partying. And then it was like, okay, now I'm just partying 4 to 5 days. And then I've just been like trying to manage. And now I'm down to what we call California sober out here, which is just smoke spot and does shrooms every once in a while.
Yes. California sober. That's the, yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah. I still only drink to celebrate. That's what I have in my head now is like, especially now that we're not going to restaurants, drinking was always paired with like, I'm not going to go out to a steak dinner and then have like a seltzer. It sucks to not have red wine or whiskey or beer with that. But now that I'm just eating at home. It's like, I don't need to fucking crack a beer right now. Let me just take a couple of more days off. Yeah, but I am firing up a fucking, we're recording at 2 p.m. We'll be done by 3:30 PST. I'll be sparking one immediately.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is like, and you hope that like everything will make it to that point, you know, that everything, all the drugs will just kind of be that thing of it's a matter of, cause you keep, you know, you kept saying this is individual to me. And, you know, I've kind of said that too for a long time, cause I practice harm reduction. I haven't shot up in any heroin in almost 15 years in that ballpark. And so I kind
congrats,
of,
congrats, by the way, that's good shit, man. Hey, good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. But, and you know, what's funny is then, you know, I say it to some people and then they're like, but didn't I see you drinking? I'm like, no, you saw me drinking. Yeah. No, that it's, you know, it's kind of a, it's just a different, it's a different thing. But I think that like that, what helped me with that is I didn't even know what harm reduction was until maybe the last few years. And I just had been naturally kind of practicing it. It's like, this is just a way for me to kind of manage. And that's why self-medicated kind of is the, is the whole thing lens I look at it through is because, yeah, it's obviously that is what it is. You know, there's
you prescribed it to yourself, a non-medical professional, myself prescribed, yes. But I do know myself better than most medical professionals, but
I do. And you know what? I was just starting out as a doctor. So I got on heroin, you know, I sued myself for malpractice and now we settled out of court. Now we're back.
I'm rich and broke because I've sued myself. I'm rich off myself. I have to claim bankruptcy. So it's complicated, but I should end up on top. Yeah. Can I ask? I'm sure you've talked about this in other forms, but how do you get? How does not one, but how do you, Murph, get started doing heroin? Is it like that classic of just like starting to try everything and then eventually some dudes that are staying around? Well, I'll let you tell it. Well, I'm gonna guess. Yeah. I'm gonna guess the one time I've turned down shit like that is. I'm assuming how it happened to everyone else.
Yeah. No. And you know, I'll tell you, it kind of was. So from I'm from Pennsylvania and kind of post industrial. A lot of the economic kind of downturn, and with that comes a lot of drugs. We have the location is equal distance in New York City and Philly, so there's a lot of drugs running through. I think just with, you know, as we've seen in a lot of other communities, poverty is, you know, and just hardship, tough times. It leads from like a place that already had like alcoholism in its DNA. You know, the miners coming up from the mine, you have those kind of shitty jobs. And it's like my mom, I was just talking to my mom recently about this, and she mentioned the whole thing was they used to go to the bars right after, and they also were paid in coal bucks. So they had to go to the coal baron's actual bar and store to like use it. So you're like, this isn't even like,
that's not legal.
This is straight up. No, yeah. It's not even legal. Yeah, this is full shenanigans. And they're like, yeah, come over and get a warm beer and wash down the coal dust was what it was. So they're like, you got to wash down all that coal dust that's settling in your throat. So yeah,
have a Yingling. It's only four coal bucks. Go nuts.
Yep. Right. Yep. So that's like kind of in the DNA is a lot of those kind of, you know, self-medication is what it was even at the time. It's a 16-hour day, and then you're just drinking yourself to sleep and back up and do it again the next day. So booze was always very prevalent. And then you add to that kind of even when those jobs went away, and then you've got, you know, the corruption like running rampant. So no one trusts any institutions. There's no there was no places for anyone to go for help. Like, you know, there's no healthcare. There's no recovery centers, yeah, or treatment centers or any actual.
And in those culture, in that culture, and I'm only speaking coming from blue collar Long Island, in that culture, it's sort of stigmatized to get any kind of help any way. Like, yeah, you can't ask like, you know. You were saying like half of your family's in AA. My family's getting out of alcoholism plan has been classically die young. It's like the easiest way. I quit drinking when I was 68 because I died. I quit drinking when I was 56 because I died. Like that's my family's plan is like, well, we never have to like solve it because we don't make it to 70. It's just like crash this fucker and we'll get a new one when we get up there.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, if my punk ass liver gives out on me,
right.
Somebody put on a list. One of you kids, get on one of my list to give me a new one. Yeah, same. No, same thing. It's riding. It's written hard and put away wet is the kind of thing. So I feel like, with that, then in comes kind of the same you're saying with oxys. And, you know, when those prescriptions, a lot of people, you know, on the job injuries or whatever it was, and they get prescribed. I mean, they were flinging that, the Sackler family in Purdue Pharma, they were slinging that oxy like it was nothing. So I think that was also part of, there was heroin here always kind of growing up. And I don't know. I looked for a fast crowd. I went from a pretty young age. I was always looking for just that. My mom, they just had a ridiculous conversation with her the other day. It was wonderful. But she was like, you're a trier. You're one of those people who's like always wants to try things. And I was like, yeah, I'm a trier, not a doer. trier.
Oh, I'm definitely a trier. I'm glad the trier in me is the same trier that gets me to like do short form improv. That is also the trier that gets me to like, I think I could run with my shirt on fire at this party. Like, I'll go right into the pool. Like, that's my trier. Like, I've always been a little too afraid of super hard shit. That was like, I had super strict parents, and like that was the reason I acted out almost exclusively, because I couldn't stand to live there. But it was the limiting factor. It didn't let me go fully, because I could just be like, my dad's going to whoop my fucking ass. And like I would just like, and for me, and forgive me, and this, I don't mean to minimize anyone else's experiences, but the situations in my childhood, in my coming up, in which I could have made that wrong turn down, or, you know, a turn, not a wrong turn, but a of get into the heavy shit, the people that were always there were good warning signs for me. There was never a charismatic, cool drug addict. The guys who I always ended up being friends with were like, bro, you got to try this shit. I'd be like, I don't even know if I want to spend an extra couple of minutes with this dude. Yes. No less potentially be like him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's helpful. Those are, I feel like the older, I think it was just a whole, it's kind of like a generation, a lot of older kids that I would hang out with that were a little bit more, because the wave of it hit, more than just the kind of predatory thing that you're mentioning, like a skeevy person. You're like, this something's good. You know, something doesn't look quite right here. I think there was a generation that was a little older than us that kind of did, not look up to, but you know, you're like, these kids are part. It just progressed so quickly. And what's funny is any of my friends who went to college, I was not in that crew, but I would go visit them and hang out at the parties and whatnot. But a lot of people in the tri-state, anyone who went to different schools, it was kind of known that, kids come in freshman year. So they're like, we're ready to fucking drink. We're part. But they're like, these fucking kids from Pennsylvania, have you been at a party with these lunatics? So I think it was just normalized where, you go somewhere and like, no, you guys are, this is your pregame situation and we're ready to tap out for the night. And it's like, I think a lot of my friends mentioned that kind of opened eyes when they went to college. Was like, we were fucked up. Like we were.
That's how I felt. I was just talking about this with someone else. That's how I felt freshman year at college when I showed up and people were like blacking out and falling down, doing all this humiliating shit. And it's like, bro, I did that when I was fucking 14, man. I'm done with that.
Yeah. I got my drinking shoes on now. I've figured out what, I'm still going hard, but I figured out exactly where that sweet spot is of like, I'm out of control, but not quite, not where you're at.
I'm not going to embarrass my. That was a big thing.
No.
I used to say, just be the second most fucked up guy at the party.
Yep.
If you're the most fucked up, everyone remembers you. If you're the second most fucked up, you just smooth sailing.
It is a cultural, and like you said, I'm sure it's the same kind of in Long Island. It's not. Yeah, you don't ever talk about it being a thing, and it's just like it really is, and. I think that just escalated, at least for me, to areas where as a trier and those kind of conditions being ripe. And then also just, like I mentioned before in the area, when you have people who are vulnerable, you get very predatory. So the whole, Catholic Church sexual abuse scandal that like went on, there was a priest, a bishop here in Scranton, which is like the Wilkes-Barre Scranton area. So it was like known as the shuffler. So he would bring like all the priests from everywhere that the diocese knew, like, we'll send him to Timlin. He'll put them around in Northeastern Pennsylvania and scatter them around. So we just, there was a lot of that going on. Yeah. So again, people just not trusting like anything and kind of asking for that. So also just to, for the record, I was not abused by any of those priests, but I was molested by a former blackjack dealer who was in her mid 40s. When I was 11 years old, she had a six pack of Rolling Rock and she was no man of the cloth, but it takes a village, right? So that was kind of my experience. And what's funny too, is the framing of that, I never really looked at as it was kind of just like, again, as a trier, it was more of a Mrs. Robinson, I kind of thought I'm seeking this out and, she's a scumbag sexual predator, but I never really looked at it that way for a long time until
I get a little older. My group of friends, my peers, I wouldn't talk to my parents about something like that happening, but if me and my peers talked about it, it would either be made fun of or talk about it positively. And in hindsight, that's straight up fucking terrible behavior. That's statutory rape. Like, that's
yeah. No, she was hovering around the basketball court and around the pool hall, and that was her move, buying beer for younger kids and for high school. And I think also she, again, I snuck in, this is not giving her any benefits of any doubt. She can rot in hell, but she was more into the 16-year-old, I think I snuck into a threesome that she was kind of like, what is this little guy? And they're like, Mark's hanging around. He's just a kid, whatever the hell. So yeah, I kind of got in there and I think she was, that was not, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of, when people are vulnerable, when there's a lot of substances involved, people are working through shit. It's just, people stop giving a fuck, just is the bottom line. And I think,
your priorities get so fucking skewed when you're addicted, where you're like, okay, well, the end game is we get a hit, right? Like that's all that matters. So then like, whatever, I'll sit in this house where the vibe is bad and something is weird. I'll go to this, I'll go meet this dude in the parking lot and the situation is, and that's what's been running through my head a lot lately with a lot of people getting in trouble and being like getting in, you know, with the criminal justice system and shit, is like just how you get roped into bad situations you don't want to be in because you're addicted to drugs or because you just need that hit or because you have no other no other chance in life. And someone's just like, stand here on this corner while we do blank. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be like, I watch The Wire, so I understand how the culture that, but just the more you hear about like unfortunate circumstances and the more you know, like how a situation for me that would have went hairy, but because I have, I had a certain amount of money and a certain amount of, you know, certain skin tone, I was able to fucking, like, that didn't stick to me setting a school on fire. I didn't go to juvie. I didn't get circled up in that could have whatever lasting effects. Or once you're in one of these incarcerated situations, how much shit gets piled on you and how that's like a self-fulfilling prophecy getting put in there. So like, it's knowing so much more about how like someone who gets in trouble isn't necessarily a criminal and almost certainly isn't necessarily a bad person. And someone who does drugs is not breaking the law. I mean, they are breaking an unjust law. Like,
yeah, that's a law problem. That's not
yet. Yeah. That's what, yeah, it's not a, that's not a, that's the, a feature, not a bug.
That's true. That's true. And you mentioned too, once you get caught up in that, like that's, you know, that's an uphill battle. And I say this all the time too, not in some, you know, fucking fake woke way or in some bullshit, but yeah, I'm alive. I'm here able to have this conversation with you right now. Cause I'm white. Like that's just a truth. That's, you know, there's chances that you get in situations and I did, you know, as a juvenile get caught up yet another, corruption situation in Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, is there was a judge, a Kids for Cash. I don't know if you heard about this. They made a documentary. It was kind of a big thing. But there was a judge, two juvenile judges where they teamed up with this, developer and he built a private prison and they started sending kids, to this for kickbacks. So he ended up making $2 million. And these are kids, and you get caught with a joint or you get caught spray painting a fucking garage, like, you know, in some truck, you know, yard or whatever.
Yeah,
where
you throw a glass bottle in an empty parking lot and someone hears that. Yeah.
And you're off. Yeah, you're shipped off.
And then there's someone who's incentivized to end you up in jail, they're not even thinking about the situation except for, and this is like my main complaint with society, with America, with Earth, is that you just know at higher and higher levels, people will make worse and worse decisions for smaller and smaller amounts of money. Like, yes. Someone could be like, if I throw this child myself into a lava pit, I get 1 cent more than I would if I just let this child. It's like, all right, well, 1,000 children in lava pits, 1,000 cents. Let's do it. You know what I mean? Like, yes. People's brains are so fucking broken where it's like, and you know this guy's not going like, well, yeah, I was going to put some of these guys in anyway, so I thought I'd take him out. It's like, kid's like, yeah, he played with a Matchbox car in class. It's like vehicular manslaughter. Fucking
yep, ship him off. Yeah, yep, yeah. Send him to this private juvenile facility. It's a labor camp. He's never going to get out. He's going to be caught in the system. And yeah, that's the end of that. So I again, just be acknowledging how fortunate I was in that situation is I went in front of this guy. So I ended up getting a criminal trespass from some sort of party, just like a boozy high school shenanigans thing. And some of us got caught on someone else's property. A friend of mine had his folks had a cabin out kind of in the woods somewhere. And, you know, the property lines get blurred out there, this, that, whatever. But we ended up, this guy called the cops on us. So I ended up getting a minor charge where I was on probation. And then, so I have my PO coming in to when I was in high school, just pulling me out of class whenever they want to, you know, stand over my shoulder in the fucking bathroom and watch me piss into a cup. And the first one right out of the gates, you know, didn't kind of tell me. I was like, well, I was already smoking weed before this, obviously. And this guy knew this. So he had the opportunity to either say to me, you know, all right, if you tell me you've smoked weed previously, I'll expect each of these tests to come back less and less, because my other buddy had a different PO who was caught in this exact same situation with me, and his PO told him that. And so he said, yeah, I smoke, you know, I do smoke weed. And she said, okay, each week I come in here to test you. I want to see it get, my guy was just like Greg Skrepanek. He's like an old, his brother played NFL football briefly. Just big fucking bulky dudes. He's just like, you know, in my face, you smoke marijuana? You smoke, this is a THC test. Like, and of course I'm like, well, this fucking dude's going to throw me. Like, no, I don't smoke weed. And I'm like, and no one, I'm about to take a piss test, but I didn't know what, you know, no lawyer.
What else can
nothing.
You do? I'm, yeah. You're I'm a fucking like, kid.
Yeah.
Hey, mighty. For over 100 years, Trico has been the leader in innovation and ingenuity for everything wiper blades. Trico was the first to mass produce wiper blades, and they have received numerous awards from vehicle manufacturers who trust Trico to put the best product on their vehicles. One of their products, Trico Neoform, is designed to match your vehicle's exact connection. That means no more guessing, no more hassle, and no more confusion while installing your wiper blades. Not only are they easy to install, but they are high-quality beam blades built to beat any type of weather. Trico Ultra Wiper Blades are American-made premium wiper blades that shine in any weather. These wiper blades also feature a unique design that converts wind force into extra pressure, allowing for maximum windshield contact. The Trico Smart Set wiper blades automatically pairs the correct size and fit wiper blade specifically to your vehicle. That's two wiper blades sized perfectly and with correct connections already attached. Simply visit wipers123.com, enter your vehicle information, and select whichever smart set you prefer, monsoon, tundra, or storm. Go to wipers123.com and use promo code MIGHTY at checkout to receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more. These wiper blades can be found again at wipers123.com, WIPERS123.com. Use promo code MIGHTY, MIGHTY, at checkout to receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more.
And wait, we're not even getting into the optics and logistics and what that does to a kid to be pulled out of a classroom by a fucking parole officer, like in front of all your class. Like, you're stigmatized for the rest of your class. Like, if I'm in your, like, if this is the 90s and I'm in your class, bro, I'm calling you Starsky and Hutch a criminal for the rest of the year. I'm bullying you. And that's awful. No, I'm awful. And no, I know that.
But it's the reality. Dude, kids look, I mean, that's high school, man. You'd be busting balls. You're like, oh yeah, go little tinkle boy. Gotta go into the bathroom with Scrap. Yeah. No, of course. It's a nightmare situation. So I did fail that first drug test, and they carted me right off, put me in, but it was in the county, Luzerne County Juvenile Detention Center. This was the year they were building this facility for the kids for cash. So I also skated, and I ended up spending some time in county, but I wasn't shipped away. So I came back, and then I had probation the rest of my senior year in high school. But and I got tested for, you know, every week for, it was usually cocaine, opiates and THC. So I spent my senior year doing a lot of acid, cause that was something they couldn't test for. So a lot of late night senior year in my folks' basement on acid. Yeah. So that's a feat, you know, that's, again, I'm like, that doesn't work here. You got this kid, you got me, you know, you got me up against the wall, and then that's what's going to happen anyway. So it was a rough, seeing that kind of stuff then kind of led to the more harder drugs too. Cause I think the more you just get a peek behind the curtain, man, it's just like, I don't understand how a lot of people don't. Dude, I love people who can just go, I don't know, man, it's all fucked up, but I live my life and I have my inner circle and I do whatever, and I can keep that straight. Like, I wish I could do that, but my brain just doesn't work that way.
You're saying something like, seeing how fucked up it is kind of makes you go like, well, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't anyway. Like, all these exits lead to the same fucking brick wall. I might as well just take whichever ride seems the funnest right now.
And, exactly.
And that's, you know, that's a pessimistic, arguably a pessimistic outlook, but arguably a realistic outlook, especially if we're not asking young Murph why he wants to do acid on all his days, that he's, because he's not allowed to do these other three drugs when he's in high school. And then it's like, why aren't we talking to Murph about why he feels the needs to do those drugs? And I'm not, again, I don't know your experience, I'm not speaking to it, but like, there probably some underlying shit there, maybe some explanation. Like, I think, and this is what I think about all the time, is like, I'm just infuriated by the way our generation was treated by the adult generation, of like, no input whatsoever. Like, I knew I had to go to college, but no one ever sat me down and was like, well, what do you want to do? And let's see if we can come up with a plan together. It was kind of like, here are nice schools. This is what your scores are. You can go here. I was like, huh? You know, it's like, like, even my own family were like, yep, this Jonathan, my mom's friend's son went to Marist and it's beautiful. It's on the river. You should go. I'm like, get whatever, get out of my room. I'll go there. And I'm like, choosing
I'll go
private,
to the river.
Yeah. Choosing
what
private.
Will I do
cost me a fortune. I'm choosing a private school that cost me a fucking fortune. I don't know what I want to do with my life. If someone would just like, hey, you really seem to like drawing and reading and you're very funny. You have all these movies memorized. Have you ever thought about, hey, you seem to be distant at work, at school, and constantly chasing and talking to the other acid kids in school about acid. Hey, have you thought about just treating a 16-year-old who is arguably old, like, you know, can get a gun or a fucking car in a lot of states.
Yep.
Ask them what's going on. Ask them what they need help with. And don't, like, even parent shit is hard because we react negatively to, like, that assistance. But I just always felt super unsupported my whole life. And I think it's the generation that didn't support me, quote unquote, they were like feral children from their parents, so they thought we were like, my son's soft, he needs a babysitter over a weekend, he's 11, when he's got two younger brothers, they'll watch each other, you know what I mean? Yep. It's like nowadays if you're like, if one of my Hollywood friends was like, yeah, I left my 10-year-old, my 8-year-old, and my 6-year-old home, we can all stay out till like 2 a.m, they'll be fine, I'd be like, I'd shit talk them behind their back, and that's like my child.
It's true. No, it's true. It was the holdover from I guess whatever the hell the greatest generation, the old World War II group. And I hate the whole ageism thing. So of course there's individuals, but we gotta do broad strokes occasionally. And I think the boomers were that like hilarious. Exactly. The holdover from still like, oh, the kids are getting real soft. And meanwhile, I'm like, but some of you were, you know, raging against the machine when you're young. You fucking sold out, man. Like you were against the man. You were fighting against NOM, and you were, you know, you were partying. Like you said, your parents doing drugs. Like, well, our parents, you know, they're getting high. They're plastic. And then all of a sudden, it was time to be like, well, now we're, you know, that's not what. And they ship it over, and it's like, now you got to go to school and you got to do these things. And then they set up for an entire generation to just be crippling debt from school they couldn't afford, for a job that didn't even, like, the diploma wouldn't get them anyway.
Still hasn't happened.
still not there.
Almost 40, haven't gotten that job yet.
Dude, you didn't go to grad school down by the river? You didn't go to that nice private grad school. That's
Fuck,
the problem.
I should have went to more school. Yeah, the boomer generation, or like whatever my parents, whatever that generation is like, hey, my dad hit me with a belt. I only hit you with my hand. You're like, wait, okay.
Yes. Okay.
And your father of the year. It's like, my dad never made eye contact with me. I'm around some weekends. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And it's like every generation is going to be a little bit more like adapt how they treat their kids based on what their parents did to them and shit.
Yep. But yeah. Now we just emotionally abuse kids. Yeah. So we're at the point where we've laid off hands, but now it's all just psychological warfare.
Yeah, now it's all like, you know what I could have been doing with my life if it wasn't for you? And it's like, yeah, I know shit. Not much. <That's> what,
the Zoomers, man. The Zoomers are all right. The younger kids, younger than us, I'm just like, you know, everyone wants to shit on them being like, and that was the same thing I think our generation got was, again, with the soft shit. It's a lot of this like, these kids, they don't want to work. They don't want to just like, there's no goddamn jobs. What do you mean people don't want to work?
Well,
people do want.
I wish we all, because I find myself, like, and I want to yell at older people, and I yell at my friends when they do this too, where they're like, Gen Z, or they're always doing this, they're always on their phone or whatever. I'll be like, you know who you sound like? Our parents talking about us. And how wrong were our parents? And they'll be like, very wrong. I'm like, keep that in mind when we shit talk Generation Z.
Yes, like, please.
Hindsight has only proven that our fat parents were wrong and we were right. We are wrong about, let's just bet on the younger generation. Well, they don't have all the complaints people our age have about younger people are, it's more about complaints about our own lives. And that's what the same thing was with the generation before. It's like, you know, you get to do whatever you want, go to whatever college you want. I had to go straight into the workforce after high school. I'm like, yes, I know. Life sucked for you. I get it. Yes. And now I'm like student debt's going to be absolved. I just finished paying it off. You know, it took me 16 years to pay it off. And part of me goes, that's fucking bullshit. But what do I want? I want them to have to pay? Like, yeah, right? That doesn't make it better for me. If someone was like, they have to pay me back, that's a case I would argue.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back up. Yeah. They pay us off, and then they pay it forward, upward, whatever, however that works.
I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to be mad at kids on behalf of Wells Fargo. If you're siding with a bank over who gets the student loan or a huge huge money-making university that has been covering up however many sex scandals for the last like fucking 50 years, if you're siding with them over children, you're wrong.
Like, yeah, you're you can't justify that in any way, but I feel like that's been drilled in, man. You see that a lot. I'm like, there's people siding with, I mean, and that's, you know, that's the whole long con Trump's running too, with this idea of like, yeah, the corporate, parties that were in Washington failed everybody, across the board. They used to be the working party and now they're not. Like, all that is very much true. So in comes the con artist sees the play here to be like, oh, people are very disenfranchised. People don't believe, the institutions have been whatever, they've been failed for years. So comes in with his shenanigans of, and at least here, I'm going to bring the coal jobs. I'll just say all the shit, and run this con. And I feel like that's like, and the people siding with that. I'm like, people are just siding with the man, like it's way too much. And it's, yeah, it's that like, who are you? Why is we'll just keep shitting on Wells Fargo. Fuck Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo's the thing where it's like, you guys ran the scam. And then you come back and they do this whole, ad campaign. We're sorry. But remember the 1920s when we were a wonderful little local bank and we all did it. And then we took everyone's money and we fleeced you and it's all gone and your 401ks are gone. It's all gone.
And then that's what I'm talking about. That's those people up the top there are making that decision. That's one degree past evil because it makes them 0.001 cents per person more money. And they just look at that decision and they choose the money over people. And I'm assuming the rates are better and the people, whatever, but they're not considering the other end of that equation ever. And that's the shit that stresses me out. Cause like when people talk about like OxyContin, like these prescription drugs, they get down to somebody eventually. Yep. And if they're being overprescribed here and overprescribed there, but there's commercials for them. There's teams of people that work to design them, marketing agencies that sell them, ad agencies, people that sell them to doctors, incentivization for the doctors to get them to patients. Patients, like if everyone's financially incentivized along the way, we all know we'll fuck the pig into oblivion for an extra dollar. Like it's
Yep. There's no more lipstick to put on that pig. There's just no more. It's
Jojo the Idiot Circus Boy.
Yes, you've mangled it. Yeah, and you're still trying to pretend like it's not even a pig anymore. You're like, I don't know what creature this was that was made. Like,
we can fuck it a little bit. We can get another couple of bucks out of this thing. Line up and fuck this mess of fucking pulled pork we have laying out in a fucking butcher paper.
Yeah, and if you listen closely enough when you're fucking that pig, you hear there's the little kill me, please. This pig wants to go. And I hate throwing, you throw around the isms, you fucking lose people often, but I also just feel like obviously with capitalism, that's the game, that we're kind of playing here. And we've always tried to balance the two of like some social programs, but also free market stuff. And it's like, this is, we've all played the Monopoly, the game that everyone hates and sits on the shelves. And if you ever play it with family or friends, it always turns into a pissing match. And the winner's like, I got all the Boardwalk Park Place hotels. And everyone else is just like, walked away. They're in the kitchen drinking a beer, laughing, having a good time. Like, so if that's not like, just as basic as it gets, you're like, that's the game we're playing here. So sure, you raked me over the coals on Park Place and you fucking loved it, didn't you? I had nothing. You had a hotel there and now my whole life is over in this.
City. You watch me go, I have nothing. And you go, well, then I guess you're out of the game because you want to stay at Park Place for one night. And when you just like hash it out to what that really means, it's like, watch you die, brother, rather than help you out a lick. Also, the turning people against each other shit that we were talking about here, all this stuff is like the older generation versus the young, they're lazy. Don't let them absolve student debt because they need to learn by paying debt. It's like, no, paying my student loans fucked me up for life. I don't want that for anyone else. And then
it's funny money. Yeah. At this point too,
Well, that's the other thing too. It's like, where's it going? Who's it for? I'm taking out a digital loan to give to from one corporation to give to another corporation. But in the middle of for 15 years, I'm paying $200 to a third different corporation. And I'm assuming Marist College. I'm assuming Sallie Mae. And I'm assuming Wells Fargo or Bank of America, whoever it is. I'm assuming all of them are making a little bit of money on that. I'll tell you who made $0 and arguably my college certificate, like what does that hold now? If it holds any actual value, you have to put that up against 15 years of predatory student loaning where I didn't even have that big of a student loan, but my decisions in life were based on the fact that I had the student loan. My wife had triple the student loan I did. I had $200. I had $150 a month for 15 years. She had $450 a month for 10 years. And that is so hard when you start after school making $30,000. My wife couldn't move out until we could move in together. We couldn't, like, once we joined our finances, we couldn't afford rent and both of our student loans. We had to make every decision. She had to make every decision in her life to make sure she paid for that student loans, all because she went to a private school for only 3 years. She transferred to Marist sophomore year. So it's like these decisions we made, we didn't benefit from, but three other people did. And the main people that wanted us to go to college and do this were our parents who didn't do this, but yep. They were sold the idea of that. And I'm assuming whoever marketed that to my parents also made money marketing that. So it's like everyone is making money except for me and my family. We're losing a shit ton of money for me to go get fucking blacked out in Poughkeepsie for 4 years. And like I could have been blacked out on Long Island for a third of that. I could have got a union job and been blacked out on Long Island and been making 75 grand a year.
Yes. Yep. And you wouldn't have to be ducking calls from Randy calling to the telemarketer. He's like, dude, now I'm screaming at some guy who's making minimum wage at a call center. And he's like, it's not me, brother. And you're like, I don't give a shit, Randy. Whoever it is, tell him to stop fucking calling me. I'm not, I don't have any money.
We're all turned on each other like it's the fucking 70s and 80s and black people are using food stamps and white people got to hate them for that. And white, and like, and you got to, like, all this stupid fucking shit. And then when you just zoom out and realize it's the same, like, 11 white dudes in suits making the same amount of, making the same, all the same money, or like, fuck all this.
Yes, dude. And listen, I asked you too, because you know, you're playing rugby. You're a ball player. I've been trying to look for the perfect analogy in terms of like sports for this, because the strategy that those 11 white dudes have been running for a long time is just simple divide and conquer. So it's so they find the spots that it's just like you said, along lines of class, along lines of race, gender. They do this age. They find all the spots, and then they simply, you know, set up a phony democracy where it's just two teams, red team, blue team. You're on one or the other, and they're both sucking and fucking in the back alleys of Congress. They don't, you know, it's like they do the whatever public face they want, but it's the WWF. You know, it's they come out, they say, well, there's a heel, and there's the face, and they do the thing, and they're all profiting. So I'm like, I'm looking for a sports analogy. I was trying to think of this the other day where it's like, that's the playbook, man. Like we know the playbook. So because, you know, we piss and moan all day, but it's at the point where, you know, and I'm not trying to shit. Everyone has their lane. So like electoral politics is one thing. Activism is another. And I think also the unions you mentioned before, like getting back to that idea of like the solidarity. Collective. And it's like our numbers are all we have. Like we have a crazy amount of numbers. It's just we keep with the divide and conquer, and they weakened all the unions and stuff. So if
right.
we don't
and,
have that.
If you just look, I'm sorry. And you're saying it right now. If you just look at any gathering of power of regular people, it's got something. It's got like 11 strikes against it that you don't know where it's coming from. Unions are hated by the corporations, but also they've been like told that like that's why schools are expensive because of teachers, and teachers unions don't allow, and that's all information you've heard. Black Lives Matter, all, you know, I hear from people on Long Island that they're worried Black Lives Matter is going to come into their town and do things. And it's like, I don't even think that means you understand what the movement is, but that's just a gathering of people who start demonstrating that they have power when we all get together. And then all of a sudden the people who have power have to divide and conquer. It's like, well, Black Lives Matter is Antifa, which is, they're on the war against the cops. And it's like, no one said any of this. And now we're in this fucking, now this is the framing of this because meanwhile, you're right. The heel and face thing is a good term because it's like red team, blue team, WCW, NWO. They're hitting each other with chairs. You're crying over the fact that this happened. And then those people are all at the same fucking rap party.
Yep.
They're at the same. They're all on Epstein's flight. You know what I mean?
Yep, it's a jumbo jet. They're all on it. They're all laughing their sick fucking asses off.
We're
debating semantics. So it's sitting here being like, no, well, all lives technically matter if you think about it. And it's like, you missed the fucking.
Yeah, you fucking bro. And this shit is like you talk where red team, blue team is very funny. And I will just have to show some allegiance to the blue team here a little bit where I think. Where we talk about that dial where if you turn it one notch more towards evil, you can make an extra penny. I feel like the red team was already a couple of notches over and in the last couple of years have turned the notch in interest of just getting those 11 people richer.
Big time.
The blue team is just a few notches away, but
yeah, no, there are not differences.
At this point, if we can turn the music down from a 13 to an 11, maybe we can have a better dialogue, and then we'll start talking about where we want to set audio levels going forward.
Yes,
but let's just turn the music down to 10 for now.
It's blaring. It's blaring. This is guar. We're now just listening to guar at a 13.
Yeah, they're spraying the fucking jizz machine on us right now. We're trying to. They're feeding me to a fucking huge fucking monster head that's on stage, and I'm gonna spit out my fucking economics and bones behind them.
That's true. And I agree with that. And, you know, going back to harm reduction too, I think that's, you know, that philosophy applies in a lot of areas. And I Noam Chomsky's, you know, talking about for years, I read a piece from him as well. And I think the reframing of this, like, lesser of evils has kind of always been a lot of people I talk to. And, you know, people are, you know, we're not as dumb as maybe our television programming and our consumer
our taste brain. would demonstrate.
Yes,
we're
yes.
smarter than our clothing would let you know.
Yes. Yep. No, I think that's true. You know, and I don't know if it's just, you know, at this point delusional, but I do love human beings. I the power structures of what I've always been like, even from a young age, I think it's just kind of seeing it firsthand. It's not like a pat on the back, like, I was a fucking genius when I was a kid. I didn't know how to connect the dots. But just seeing like the power structures and seeing what, you know, what just, you know, folks who are just putting their head down, trying to feed their families, trying to live. Most people are trying to do that thing where they're like, I am trying to hold on to a little bit of love here. I am trying to be like community love. But at every turn, you just keep getting, you know, crushed with the power structure. So I think that's right. That the harm reduction side of that, I've always, you know, you grow, you're an absolutist when you're young, and I'm carving the old anarchist A into desks when I was in seventh grade and getting suspended for it. So that was my big thing of like, no, man, it's all shit. It's all whatever. And as you get a little older, it's just also realizing, well, that's just trying to keep the floodgate. You just plug in like a best case scenario to try to be like, if we are going to make a movement, you know, and kind of just keep going back to, cause we're a fucking month out here. So, and I'm moved back to Pennsylvania, which is there's a hell of a lot of that going on.
Oh,
so
there's no waiting. Get your residence changed as quickly as fucking possible, dude.
Yes. No, I know. No, the timing of this is the one part where we came to town. And I was like, Luzerne County got the national media attention in 2016, where it was like, they picked the perfect narrative of this, like, oh, this is the county that elected Trump. So, you know, Chris Matthews is here doing hardball town halls from Luzerne County. And there's a couple journalists wrote books that about the whole, the forgotten and all this other shit. And it's like, yeah. And, you know, for the people I know that I write off, and some of them are in my family, they're straight up racist, and that stinks. And the xenophobia with the build the wall shit. So again, you look at the funny thing of like, dude, you remember the fucking Coleman, like we're talking two generations ago, like the memory is so short of, you know, when Irish and Polish immigrants came here and worked in the mines, it was the same shit. Oh, well they're drunk, you know, they're drunk, crazy people who just are violent and they stab, you know, and they break up the unions that they were trying to build then. So, and it's the coal barons, man, it's all the coal barons. So now it's this like abusive relationship people are in, where then they turn it on this like, oh, well, who's stealing your jobs? Why did manufacturing go? Why did that go away? Well, we need like, it's easier, you know, it's easier for people to look down and to shit rolling downhill. It's like, no one wants to pick up shit and walk it to the top of the hill and stuff it down these pigs' throat.
Right.
You'd rather just be like, I'll just take a big dump and watch it roll downhill and laugh at the people at the bottom. Like,
right.
So it's tough to watch. But I've had those conversations where I'm just like, listen, this is, you know, we need to get organized. And in 2016, I was kind of like, all right, maybe this lunatic will pull back the curtain, light it on fire. We'll all kind of see. And I think we've never had more eyes open than previously, but we're not quite organized yet to like make that push. We're still getting hit by the divide and conquer, and it's still working. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just like, yeah, you gotta get that out. Like you said, turn the dial down a little bit so that we can organize.
Right.
Cause there's no olive branches to be reached out at this point. They'll be.
No, you're right. That reveal behind the curtain, this monster lit the curtain on fire, revealed behind the curtain, a lot of eyes on him, and a lot of us were like, I was worried that it was kind of fucked up and twisted behind there. And now I know. The bummer is a lot of people saw behind the curtain and were like, ooh, like I like what this guy's doing behind the curtain. This is what I would put out on the show if I was the writer of this play. And you're like, oh no. And then a lot of people are like, Mr. Trump, you are the avatar of death and I'm here for you. And you're like, no, 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 no. You guys are supposed to stay fucking in your holes and not get activated. Now the worst people, the best people are activated in that they have to do something, but a lot of bad people, like whatever. Trump is the fucking stone that awakens the ancient warriors to come to save Earth. Also awakens a few of the old scumbags that are like, crack, okay, time to launch my online. Yeah, exactly.
Take center stage. This is my moment. We've been waiting.
Time to hashtag save the children. Oh, cool.
Yes. Yeah. No, that, I mean, and all the, that's what's so fucking, yeah. So you mentioned the Epstein thing too. It's like there's all the distractions, and that's where you get Q coming out of that. You get like all of the rocks have been overturned and out crawl from the muck, like all the shit where, and the media just soaks it up, man. And I'm like, you don't do like during the, you know, the initial part of quarantine, it was like every, like this is 24 hour coverage. While there's like, you know, some people, progressives actually fighting during the primaries and stuff, being like, what about healthcare? What about if we just offer, like, can we give everyone healthcare? Like, people should just have healthcare, right? Like, we all agree. It's like, yeah, everyone kind of agrees with that. So that gets thrown aside into a pandemic, which couldn't, again, you said writing it. If you wrote this fucking play, you get the note of like, all right, I think we got one too many things here are going
on. Wait till you get to the third act where the fucking main bad guy gets the disease. You're like, what? No, it's like, yeah, no, I'm serious.
He can't get the guy.
This is fucking hack, dude. He can't have it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, it's too good. It's a stranger than fiction beyond. But yeah, it's you see all that going on and you see the media coverage is all about the AR-15 crew on this, you know, the courthouse steps saying, reopen the economy, get the job or whatever. But then you pull the camera back. You're like, this is 15 lunatics here. Like this is 15 fucking people. And it's the same. You're like the things that they don't want to cover are the like wildcat strikes that are going on. And people are starting to organize, and the younger generation doing a lot of, you know, activism online that they've used, which we all know that the horror show that is, you know, that can be the internet, but also no one wants to talk, you know, talk about the parts of it that you can use to mobilize and use to get, you know, movements actually off the ground and moving. So it's like,
and I'm assuming it's the internet and social media has just like launched fucking philanthropical efforts into a stratosphere too. The amount of opportunities I've had to donate to hyper specific things, whether they're GoFundMes or specific, like Ed Markey, his primary against a Kennedy. I'm like, why am I giving money to that? Like, and then someone's making money for sending that email to me. I'm spending, and people in Boston are making money. Everyone is, and somehow I'm losing $50 because I need to help climate change, and I'm here for it. But it feels like there's a lot richer people all making these decisions around me, and I'm in the middle throwing friends getting fucking paralyzed, and I'm like, here's $100. Like, I don't know what else to do because no one else is here to help. Like, it feels
there's
crazy.
No medicine for you. So now the onus has been put on us to, and we'll fucking do it. That's the other great thing about humanity. And that's what gives me the faith, is even despite all of this, you still see those acts of community. And of course we still like, we our souls are not completely gone. They're bruised. They're definitely bruised. But I feel like you just said, you bring up that the GoFundMe thing. I'm like, it, you could look at it two ways. It's of course tragic where you start being like, why are people so, you know, but people are still doing it. So I'm like, the idea being like, all right, so when you gouge us every year without, you know, with under penalty of incarceration with taxes, and they keep going up, no one's lower. And the whole day, again, the red team, blue team, is like, no, the taxes just keep going up. They always have, they never go down. So, you know, using that money to be like, you just start going, let me just take a peek at those books. Like, let's read. Yeah. But then you realize it's all kind of funny money. Like it's all, and it was the same with the pandemic. Now you're just throwing on trillions of dollars to here and there. And it's like, this isn't even like, you know, these are the kind of people who don't have to take a little slip of paper with a president's face on it and go down to try to buy, you know, a six pack or a coffee or a loaf of bread. They don't touch that much. It's not even real money at this point.
Yeah,
like they're saying it is what it is. And we're just going along with it.
Yeah. People's wealth is like doubling or tripling in days based on like the health of the president. It's like, this feels like the machine is broken. It feels like the game. That's not how it's supposed to work. Like,
no.
Like, This how is, like, is the stock market possibly going up in all this? If it is, it's not an accurate representation of, like, what the world, what's going on in the world. I mean, we know it's not, but it is important to a lot of people for whatever reason. But for fuck's sake, like, something's off in the machine if, like, people are dying. So many people have died. So many people are unemployed. And honestly, my 401k is doing better than ever. It's like, ow, it shouldn't be.
Yeah, someone sold you some kind of, well, it's the pyramid scheme thing, man. It's like, it shows how ultimate that is. And you mentioned before the like kind of this idea that with debt and with, like, when you're like, well, why, how is it still that at the top, like, this money is being shifted around? And we've seen it just in our industry too. And I don't know how much, like, commercial stuff that you're still doing, but it's funny to me with the VO stuff. So in the beginning of quarantine, then it became like, well, commercials aren't going to stop airing. So, you know, I'm reading spots for whatever the hell, Walmart being like, we care about the essential workers out there on the front lines. So you're doing these spots and I'm just like, and they're airing. So, you know, what's funny is, I mean, I didn't book the Walmart spot, but
yeah, don't bother trying to look for me. I'm not,
I didn't do the Walmart thing, but Amazon, all of them. And you're like, what's funny is the whole industry is built around spending money. Cause what people don't understand too, is you think about how that, from the client. So you got this corporation, it's got all the money, then it goes down to, like, your casting directors and your studio, and then into the agency, the ad agency, down to the, and I'm like, if you're willing to air spots that I recorded in a fucking closet, you know, with a little microphone plugged into my phone, then it's like, why are you now going back? Like, people think, well, wouldn't they want to save money and not get back into paying all this money for studio tech? They need to spend, like, it's the whole thing. They want that money floating around. Like, it's the whole illusion.
And I don't understand it at all. Like, advertising agencies are overbilling production companies who are overbilling clients, who are overbilling, blah, blah, all the way up until whoever it is, like Dr. Jonathan Pepsi or whoever owns everything. And he's just signs off on, like, a huge bill that pays hundreds of people, like, who are needling, and he gets the biggest, it's all fucking wild.
Absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd. And then we're at the bottom, you know, we're at the bottom just as trying to, you know, sell the snake oil into a mic. And it's like, they're now asking us to, like, produce spots from home. So we don't get paid anymore. It's like, can you actually deliver, like, a spot? And I'm like, wait, I'm sorry. I now need to also be the person who does, like, a mix on this stuff. Like, what?
Yeah, well, let me look at the Pepsi. Let me look at the budget for how much you pay for a cameraman and a mixer and a producer then. And let's talk adding all that up. They're like, oh, well, hold on. Sorry. Disconnecting. We're going to call literally anyone, because anyone that's, and then our business, you want to talk about, like, you talk about, like, scab union people. Like, our business is like, you're like, no, I'm actually deserving of $1,001. And then someone's like, no, this job only pays $1,000. And you're like, I'm deserving of $1,001. I've done this a million times. I'd be very good at it. It's like, next to me will be like a psychopath with the blood pouring out of their mouth. And they're like, he's going to do it for $1,000. We're going to save $1. You know what I mean?
It's like, he's got a beard. He's got a beard, buddy. You want to gamble on that?
Yeah. You want to bet that this, like, you're like, yeah, I guess, fair, fine. I'll fucking do it. I'll do anything to just feel validated and work. Oh, I shouldn't have said that out loud, because now you have the power.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what makes this business unique. I mean, that's all, you know, that's all the exploitation in every business model. But yeah, the one with us has the extra layer of, like, need to be loved. Don't forget. You need to love me. And you're like, God damn it, you got me.
We know you're broken. You're an actor. So whatever it is you're seeking out, we have it. And we only get it if you give us everything you have for it. If you give us everything you have, you could be in this Capital One internet only spot where you dress as a Viking and go, thank you, sir.
Yep. And hey,
are you willing?
Line.
Yeah, are you willing to give it all?
Oh, man.
Wait, so Murph, just to run us through. So you're young, you get into heroin. How does one get out of it? How do you get out of it? You're into it for how long? Talk us through that a little bit before we get out of here, just because we got to get to the happy part of the story.
Absolutely. just the train needs to take a stop. I kind of was maybe like a 4-year love affair kind of thing. I started shooting up pretty quickly. Didn't have an aversion to needles. So I went right from snorting to shooting it up fairly fast. And I think it was the kind of thing where it was just, I was very fortunate to have the support system, family and friends. That's such a huge thing that I thank them for constantly. Just they were there with open arms and love, even though you know, when I put them kind of at arm's length and kind of disappeared for a while. And, you know, all the other shenanigans of stealing and selling shit from my folks, which is something that I was ashamed of for a long time. And I had to kind of get over that. But yeah, I think once I realized that it's like, I have now isolated myself because that's the biggest thing. It's like, I love being around people. I love the whole thing. And I found myself just completely disappeared. And I'm like, there's obviously something, if I'm feeling this kind of shame, if I'm feeling like something is not working here, it's like, you can only numb your soul for so long before you realize like, yeah, I've isolated myself to the point of either no return. I've, you know, friends overdosing and you know, people and the law, the legal part of it is like, you know, you start pulling shenanigans just to get that fix. And I'm like, I want to kind of pull myself out of this. I do think that I can engage in, you know, some of the rage against the machine that I had and my own personal traumas I need to work through. It's like, it might be time to just try that. I think maybe, you know, I can use, you know, my sensibilities comedically, because gallows humor, I was even with a lot of friends, even in the darkest of days, which a lot of them that have also kind of come around now. And with this project coming out, people reaching out to me being like, yeah, man, like we've always, we're just like, you always able to make people laugh, even, you know, even when it's, you know, getting those, the Hep C results back and we're sharing needles. And it's like, you got to go through all that. So you still have, you had jokes about it. And it's like, now I'm just trying to put those jokes out to like, hopefully lift a little stigma and be like, let's talk about this a little bit more and let's stop shaming.
Anecdotally, a lot of my friends who are recovered from the real hard stuff, even the non-comedy guys, dudes, just, you know, fucking mechanics and shit that I'm friends with from like upstate New York and Long Island and shit. These dudes, and I don't know if the sense of humor is something that comes from surviving and recovering or is one of the reasons that they were one of the guys that made it out and the other people didn't. I don't know, but a lot of them are very funny and very casual about what the shit that I remember the first time one of my buddies just going off telling me about doing this. He still drinks, still comfortable drinking, and talking about making fentanyl tea and talking about how you think Snapple is bad. You think diet Snapple is bad, bro. And just going on about like the shit, taking fentanyl patches that were used like from someone using it for pain, putting it in boiling water and drinking it so it tastes like someone's arm and draw, you know? Yeah. And just all this shit and like so funny and so dark. And I'm like, and you just saying that there, and granted, people that I end up hanging out with in life end up being funny or have good sense of humor for whatever reason, you know, real recognizes real or whatever. But there's something about that too. And I think maybe it was an asset that helped you recover. You were funny before, obviously, or it's something that you came out with even stronger because you were like, you know, it was a fucking buoy, a life raft or a way to, you know, a way to spit shine a fucking turd for a little while.
Yes. Yes. No, I have actually have not really totally thought about it that way, but I would say that I think that's true. I think, you know, naturally being a little bit, you know, just goofier growing up, but I think that, you know, to find that humor in the darkness, I think that is a little bit of both. And I think that did help. I mean, you know, cause you get to a certain point where you're just like, yeah, you can either, you know, you either laugh or cry. And I think as we both know, there's a fine line sometimes between those moments where you're just like, it kicks in.
I need
in
one or
just,
the other right now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I need some release right now. For my insides.
I don't know. It's one of these three.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go do some autoerotic asphyxia. I'll get a little bit of both. I'll
find out which one it is.
Yeah.
Wait, one more question I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. Was any part of you realizing that this was going poorly? Because I find this path for a lot of addicts too. Because you're extrovert, you get into it from partying, from wanting to hang out and be around people. And then the few times that I felt like I was getting into a dark place is when it wasn't about being around people. And I feel like eventually you're doing heroin with some buds, but then eventually it just becomes like, I just want to do it in my room and have the door shut. And then you realize like, oh, my personality has changed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm different now. Yeah.
100%. Yep. You realize it. Yeah. It completely gets you, you know, to the point where, and you know, you talked about this before being the second, mess at the party and still having fun. And like, you know, there's still an element of that it's like, yeah, people are always working through shit and you never know. Everyone has their own personal experience with with drug use and booze and all of it. But yeah, my personal thing was always kind of a little bit of a fun time Charlie. And then you're like, there's no fun time Charlie's at a Turkey Hill bathroom at 3 a.m. You know, shooting up by yourself. There's no fun time Charlie's in that restroom. I promise you.
That's the thing. Cause like that is therein lies like, where you started here for that reason, like, oh man, it's fun. Hey, got to keep the party. Let's keep hanging out. These guys are doing heroin. They seem fun. Oh, they're interesting. They like good music. Let's do a little fucking smack. Oh, okay. Blah, blah. Not trying not to minimize all these huge insane life choices people are making. Yep. And then eventually you're like by yourself, you know, like, or, you know, doing whatever you need to do to make that money for that next hit, or thinking about what you're going to do to get the next hit. And you're like, fuck, I haven't been around people. Like, I got into doing drugs because the hot girls were doing drugs, or I started drinking because the older girls were drinking. Now no one is talking to me, and I, you know, like, I don't want to be around myself. And that's part of it too, is like, you hate who you've become. So that's the hard part with coming to terms with that shit. But that's a solid marker if anyone's listening out there and you're going through this where you're like, my friends don't even want to fucking do the kind of partying I want to do now. It's like, you know, think about that, man. Take a breath, or a woman, whoever you may be, person. Take a breath and just think about what that could mean. Back to you, Murph. Back to you about 4 years in, deciding like, with the help of your family, like, time to no longer do this shit.
Yeah, I think that was the and then also finding again with the harm reduction thing. So I mentioned once I did finally say it's time, because you get called out by friends and family for a while, and then you push even further away. And so I think the fact that they were willing when I was to come home, and I just remember coming home to see my folks, and I hadn't been around. I had my own apartment for a little bit, but then I was on the street bouncing around with motels and whatever, people's couches, wherever I could be for a while. So, you know, I just came home one day and my mom was there and in the kitchen. And I just, you know, this is just a very vivid memory of just nothing was even really said. I just came in, we both started crying, hugged each other, got down on the floor in the kitchen, and, you know, rolled around hugging each other and just crying for a while. And that was, you know, that was the moment where it was just like, you reconnect. And it was just all the shit of like, I've known you forever. You know, I have a great relationship with my folks too. Like, it was, so that was another hard part. You know, of course I was rebellious as a youth. I put them through hell. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm a big enough person, you know, to be able to with open arms like you guys did. So that's just really, really, really fortunate that they were willing to do that. And then I said, all right, let's make a run at it. So, but then the thing is with what treatment options are available and what kind of, you know, where the next steps are. And so, you know, I tried the NA, you know, 12 step kind of thing. I went to a place that's recently closed here, but it was called Choices. And it was just a real, a real shithole.
I mean, that's either an improv theater or a rehab facility.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Which way do you want to take a spiral here?
Yeah. Expensive addiction do you want to ruin your 20s and 30s with?
Yep. Yep. Which dragon do you want to chase here? The audience's laugh or the heroin high. Yeah.
Can I ask, Murph, was it, a specific, one particularly bad night, or just a bunch coming together that made you decide to go back to your parents? A bunch.
It was a bunch coming together. There was no necessarily one moment. And you know, it's just, on empties, like maybe like the best way for like, just emotionally, physically, also just the day-to-day grind. You know, I was for a while, I was able to sell in the area. It's easy to make runs to Philly, and you start going and buying in bulk there for cheap, and then, you know, selling it here just feed your habit. I mean, there's no, you know, there's no getting high on your own supply. Like I got high on my entire goddamn supply. That's 101. If you're actually trying to make a business.
Not do the drug you sell is like a famous. Yeah.
Yep. That's the, And now
you get fucking nicked one time coming in and you're on the bus. You go, you're a guy now who's objectively value added to society. If some shit fucking you get hit there, you're gone. You're a tax anomaly. Your life is ruined. You're in and out. We know what happens once someone goes into jail, how hard it is to get that stigma off of you, get out of there, period. All that. And like, that's the shit. Like, any one of those times you hear about someone like this, it could be just, and like, not every, obviously not every story of someone getting busted is like a sad, like some of them are, you know, people are pieces of shit out there. But like, you're making this bad decision because you have no choice because something is controlling your fucking choices, to use that word again. And you could end up, you know, your whole life could end up being, you know, you make one more bad choice or someone or one thing of luck that, you know, that bus that you're taking from Philly gets rear-ended and cops, have, you know, like anything could happen. You're fucking, and that's it. And like you're, and now you're just a dude. No one, you're the funniest guy in the cell block if you're still alive.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the shit that breaks my fucking heart. And I'm happy that it didn't happen to you. So, you go into choices, which is choices. You're making choices at the time.
Making choices. I also have this great bit. There was the, you know, the real fancy rehab of the Stars Promises that's in Malibu, California. But I was doing the bit too of like, you know, but promises are expensive, but choices are a dime a dozen.
Yeah. Hey, I can't promise you shit, but hey, you got to give you a couple of choices.
I'll give you two of them. So that was choices didn't quite pan out for me. I've actually bolted night one choices, ran out the fire escape. So that was not quite, again, for me, that wasn't totally, you know, what. So I did the cold turkey move. I went down in my folks' basement, and I just have to keep saying it every time, but like very fortunate that they were willing to be like, well, what do you need? You know, what do you need? We don't know anything about this. Like, yeah, we partied a little bit. We do whatever you're, this is another level. We don't totally know. Let us know what's here. So I'm just down in their basement, you know, watching like old VHS tapes that are down there, and mom's making, you know, some soup, but you can eat anything, you do whatever. And I went through the first, you know, kind of the withdrawals, the famous, train spotting that they kind of sensationalize it and make it all this whatever, but it's really, really, a nightmare. But I got through that. And then what I found even worse was the psychological blowback afterwards. Cause then you get through the physical withdrawals and you're like, all right, I'm out the 72 hours, you know, to 3-4 days. I'm on the other side of that. And then you just kind of like, well, now what, you know, what the hell have I been doing this? I still have all that underlying stuff that I wanted to deal with. So, And I've, you know, kind of not put myself in any kind of position to make a next move. And so I went to the doctor to assess the damage. That was the thing too, is just, you know, my folks paying out of fucking pocket. Like they worked five jobs between the two of them. They had no healthcare. So that's a fun thing. But they, you know, they paid out of pocket to get me to go and see a doctor and get some tests and blood work done and whatever. And I found out I had Hep C. So that was, again, from what you mentioned earlier with the needle exchange programs and things with harm reduction that just should be, you know, that's just part of it. We should have that available to everyone. And even if you want to, even on a moral standpoint, if you think that that's kind of gross and you don't want to deal with it, just on a burden to society, even if you're going to be that asshole, it's like, I don't care about the humans involved, but what's the cost to me of this? It's more costly. Like you get people with, you know, and end up sharing needles, getting disease. It's like needles are fucking cheap, man. If you have those and you have an exchange program, people will use it. Just like the Catholic Church wanted to be against condoms in the days of like, well, if you give the kids prophylactics, they'll be fucking like rabbits. And you're like, well, they're fucking like rabbits.
They'll be fucking anyway. And Catholic priests, don't tell us who and who isn't fucking. Okay.
Yeah, right?
We're not going to take your word on who and who is not fucking.
Yes, yes. Safe sex does not apply to what the fucking
it's
garbage
all unsafe with the shit you guys are doing.
Yes, yes. Rubbers or no rubbers. Yes.
Well, that's something that like, that's something I always think about too. On like a pure like business, I see people as fucking commodities. At that level, it's like having less beings with Hep C than without. Having less people with Hep C is safer for society, cheaper for society. At that, and like
that's the negotiation.
And if you can't agree on that, you should at least need to hear like, it saves human beings' lives.
Right,
like
right,
if that
right.
doesn't work, like if I can't get through on those two, I don't know what the fuck you're.
Who are you? You're a bad sociopathic businessman. Like right, you just be a good sociopathic moneymaker. Like come on, be good at it. Be good at it. So that's kind of like So that was a year of treatment, and they've come a long way with that medication for Hep C. But then it was kind of just a year of giving myself shots, and I lost even more weight than I did when I was at my fighting weight on heroin and losing my hair. And it's like a treatment to try to, you know, kill this virus in your liver. So it rocked me a little bit. And that was kind of a rough patch to be like, how do I now again? It's like, okay, so I got over the hump, got through the withdrawals. I'm ready to go. I want to be, you know, be a functioning member of my family and society. And then it's like, oh, well now you got a year of
Jesus.
Of hell to go through, which is because there was no needle exchange situation. So it's so then I got through that, but it was there was some drinking, you know, and some psychedelics. Honestly, it was another way with my head to get on straight. Aside from the physical part of it, it was just kind of like, who the hell am I, and what am I trying to do here? And just again, this is all for me. Like when I always tell people about this shit, everyone's individual journey. Like it's dangerous to try to ever do like the blanket stuff. Each person is has their own thing. So, you know, for me that worked, but I would never say to someone that was coming off like, yeah, you know what, get some mushrooms and go out to the woods, go up to the Poconos and wander around for a couple of weeks and see, you know, then you'll find yourself. I mean, I don't know, you know, I was trying to do it. So it gave me a little perspective on like, well, yeah, you know, I want to maybe take a go at this performing thing. And, you know, comedy's always been something that has interested me. And, you know, I was writing a lot when I was, you know, to varying degrees of shit that's worth a damn. But, you know, when I was on heroin and when I was, you know, just up from high school, even just writing a lot of stuff. So I kind of, it's like, here's something to rally behind. Here's something that I'm passionate about. Let me get through this. And so, again, my folks were there to help through that. And so I did get through that point. Some smoking weed a little bit. I mean, especially with that, you know, it's like appetite. It's kind of like a, you know, I don't want to liken it to like chemo of what people are going through, but it is that thing where it just kicks the shit out of your body for a year to kill this thing. And so wasn't eating whatever. So, you know, smoke a little weed and I could eat a sandwich. So,
and I then think you found, and at that time you can like smoke weed and then you don't feel that what you felt like when you shot up, like when you're, yes. you're like, it isn't the same. And whether it's just not the same for you or your brain has gotten to the point of like, we're not getting addicted to some shit again or whatever, you know, like, you could just feel, you just knew making that adult decision. You're like, this is not a slippery for some people. I trust a lot of people, like people will tell me, they'll be like, I can't even fuck with anything anymore. Cause it's just, I'll take a couple of CBD gummies. And then the next weekend I'll be like texting someone to get coke. And I'm like, okay, no, each their own, you know, like I get it. But then you'll notice, I know people who are in my fentanyl buddy. And he's like, he drinks like 7 nights a week and smokes weed on Sundays. You know what I mean? It's like,
keep holy that Sabbath, brother.
Yeah, and he's fine, and he's quote unquote fine. He's alive. Yeah. So many people, so many of his peers, and so it's one of those things too. And God bless you, Murph, for getting out of it. But it's one of those things too that you do from 20 to 24, then again from 31 to 30. You know, like, and that's I'm seeing a lot of my friends getting hit, and friends of friends, and family members and shit getting hit. When they're like, oh, I thought they got clean. And they're like, no, some shit, backslide. Now they OD'd or committed suicide.
That's a big thing when you're off for a while too, is that tolerance goes down. And now in my day, you know, you're buying heroin, you know, you're getting heroin. It's like, Jesus, these kids now, you buy something, you get that fentanyl. It's creeping in.
Crazy.
Yeah. So when you're off for a while and again, you know, I think this is just, and I'm always, you know, this is my opinion on this just in general, is that's why with harm reduction, abstinence being a part of it, but also not being the whole thing. Cause I do believe the psychology runs hand in hand. There's a reason the 12-step program was adopted by the court system, was adopted by, you know, I think that mentality sometimes too of this, you know, falling off the wagon stuff. It's like people are sober for, you know, 10 years. And that means to them literally not a, you know, substance at all. Other, you know, maybe chain smoking and chugging coffee at the meetings as we all do.
You can always, there's a vibe to a lot of my addict friends where it's like, and it's like, just tell me what's okay to be addicted to. It's like, I got friends who drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and run like they used to drink and do drugs. And it's like, I smoke a pack a day and I run 8 miles a day. And it's like, I don't understand how you do both those fucking things.
Yep. 4K in a carton. Like that's exactly. No, they defy science. It's amazing. And that helps a lot of people, you know, with some personalities, you know, it runs the gamut, but a lot of people, there's obsessive nature kind of to you in your thing. So it's like, let me put something in that could be, you know, at least, you know, less harmful than what it was I was doing. And so, you know, I think that's what's tough. You mentioned some friends, and I have the same thing when people, and then one time, you know, you have that one drink, and if you've been told the whole thing, you have one and you spiral and go out of control. Then when you do that, you kind of think, well, I fucked up. I lose the chip that I have, or I can no longer say 5 years sober, change whatever it is. I might as well make this a weekend. I might as well go bender on this. I'm going to go down to the Trop in Atlantic City or whatever the hell's still open.
Yeah. It's like, well, that's like that extremist, like that super strong point of view on sex too. And it's like, oh no, I feel horny and I don't think I'm supposed to. If I'm going to get in trouble anyway, I'm going to just do. And now that I'm maybe had unprotected sex, I can't tell anyone because it's such a stick. It's so stigmatized. I'm supposed to say no, I can't. And if you're someone who's like able to turn and go like, I had a fucking drink this weekend. I actually didn't feel that crazy or out of control. I just wanted to see if I could, or I missed having a beer with my brother, you know, as an old tradition. Yep. And just I did it. And I don't think I lost control. Like, but people can't have that conversation. And I feel like a lot of the problems we have, and this is me, obviously, a white straight man whose life has been pretty pretty cush nonstop. It's a lot of the problems we stem from is just like we're not allowed to say, hey, I think I want to fuck guys. And I know you keep talking to me about girls, but I think I like dudes. Like, yep. I'm curious about this drug. I'm curious about this lifestyle. I'm curious about this profession. I'm curious about, because we don't like let people, like we tell everyone, no, here's the rules here. And yeah, there are rules for babies where it's like, don't put your finger in anywhere near an electric socket. Eventually you're going to be 25 and have to plug in a laptop and your fingers are going to be near the electric circuit. But we're assuming we yelled at you when you were fucking two, you know what, but at five, or eight, when your kid's charging a switch, you're not like, watch your, you know, like, you gotta trust him at some point. Like, you gotta talk to him about why you're sometimes allowed to touch the electrical outlet, because power comes from there, and we need it for fucking air conditioning and computers and video games and shit.
Yes, that's absolutely it, man. It's like treating people, I mean, you know, we're talking about basic human dignity, and everything you just said there is it's all the intersectional aspects of this, which is why I think that the harm reduction movement at large is even greater than just a treatment for potential, you know, harmful drug use. It's the whole idea of this, you know, a social movement for you know, equality and for lifting stigma and for stop marginalizing people for behaviors and for who they are. And like, so I think it's all interconnected and it does go back to that. It's like, what we're asking for here is just some human dignity. And I think that goes across the board, and it starts with us. It starts at the bottom. That shit's never going to start at the top. So it's working through that, which is what I hope to do, you know, and it's why I try, at least, and this is, you know, my lofty goal, but at least when you're making, you know, yucks about this kind of shit. I mean, it's experiences I went through. So there's that, you get the long leash, but I also don't want it to be damaging in a way where it's, you know, cause sometimes you get into that. And I did this early on where you're like, oh, let me tell this crazy story about that was me back then. And I'll tell like a wild thing. And that's certainly a fun, but just for what I ended up happening to me from those stories and filling in the blanks, I try to frame it a little bit more in a way where it's like, it's not glorifying, but it's also not, you know, shame, you know, trying to make it, you know, shameful. It's almost just that, like, we're human beings. We live lives. This is the one I've led up until now, and, you know, no one way or the other. Let's find some humor in it, in the hopes that we can all kind of talk about this stuff in a different framing.
Yeah. So it's, you're not, your new stuff that you're doing now is not just like, I mean, this is how I pretty much started out doing in the business too, is just like, this is a true thing that happened to me and it's fucking fucked up. And I don't think we live the same life, you and me, audience. So yep. To you, you're going to be like, this isn't it. Like, and I think, for a while, that's what we do, and you realize you've had a certain life experience. But now that you've got that, you know, 2020 vision, hindsight. Now you got 2020 vision.
Now your vision improved somehow.
Yeah, now you're doing better, bro. Life's turning around. No, it's one of those things where it's like, now you have the fucking depth, the context where you're like, I can, let's talk about a little bit about this. And you have your, you know, your opinions and your, you know, your points of view that you're going to get across now. And it's not all about like, how fucking funny is this? Like, how, imagine seeing what I looked like then, blah, blah, blah.
Right. That's a big part of it. Yeah. Because it's the, you know, we can laugh at me. The gateway there is, for me, is at least like, yeah, we can laugh at me, but that can't be where the laughter stops. It's like, I'm trying to point those arrows up to be like, let's start, you know, laughing a little bit about the absurdity of some of this systemic, you know, oppression and just treatment and just the way the whole framing is like, yeah, you try to, that's the lofty goal. That's exactly right. We all start out with that. Just like, well, I can be the clown. I can do the little thing. And we can kind of laugh at how much of a mess I am. But
right.
You know, we've
right.
seen too many comedians too going down that road. And that's, you know, if that's the you know, the ceiling of what it is, you start to get real sad about yourself. You know, it's
right.
It's like, this is not something to just like, we can laugh about that as an entry point to start really talking about bigger issues. But at first, if that's all you do, it's just kind of becomes like, oh man, you know,
at some point you realize if that's all you are, you got to make more of those stories. And to make more of those stories requires making bad fucking choices.
Yeah, right?
Once you've decided what the choices you need to be making are. And that's when you start to go like, okay, time to reevaluate. I don't think I can keep up this level.
The well is getting empty. What do I need? Yeah. What
it's
sort
not
of
something I need to be refilling. I'm now a fucking married 38-year-old. I don't think I should be getting in fist fights in a fucking rugby tournament and jumping out of a moving bus to fucking say hi to a girl. Like none of that shit anymore.
No. And the sequel's never as good as the original. You know, you get one crack at that Turkey Hill bathroom. Then I don't need to go back there.
Especially if it's the same actors. If you're not rebooting it with younger, handsomer people and it's the same actor, it's a little depressing.
That's the truth.
So that's what you're trying to get all this out with. Murph is self-medicated. Which is now a TED? Is it a TED Talk? It's an Instagram Live series that I've seen you've been doing, and it's gonna be a podcast. But let's talk to my listeners a little bit about what you got going on, where they could find you and shit.
So the other good thing is kind of I've been reaching out to a lot of folks because, like I said, I didn't know a lot about harm reduction, so I've been talking to people in that space, professionals, and you know, just kind of drug users themselves are leading the whole movement, which is another exciting thing. Instead of just, you know, doctors from afar saying, well, this is how we, you know, assess patients. It's kind of a movement for drug users by drug users. So I've been talking to a lot of people who have that experience, and that's been really great with the Instagram Live stuff. So I use my own personal Instagram. I didn't kind of do a whole thing of like, let me just, you know, start this, its own thing. So I've been posting those on my Instagram. That's at Murph Meyer. And then selfmedicatedpod.com is the website that has everything. So there's live streams we're doing now as I'm recording the podcast, which will be released towards the end of the year.
That's awesome, man. And I appreciate you coming on. I've always enjoyed talking to you. I'm glad we got to do it in a formal setting.
Me too, buddy. Thank you for having me, man. I missed that face.
Please, dude, I miss you too. And I'm just going to take a moment to be serious, to say I'm super proud of what you're doing and what you have done in the past. And I'm glad to hear, you know, that that's behind you and that you're helping other people. And if anyone is listening to this and is, you know, thinking about seeking treatment or help or something like that, make that fucking move.
Yes.
Make
that I'll plug the website again just really quick, because all resources that I have on there as well. And I always try to, you know, there's always the shameful plugs, but in reality, even if you don't listen to my goddamn podcast, going to Self-Medicated Pod, there's a resources tab, and it's a lot of great harm reduction. You know, the National Harm Reduction Coalition and Never Use Alone is a line you can call, and places to get Narcan mailed to help with overdose. So there's all the great resources. So go to the website if you are kind of having a rough go of it, or someone you know and you love there's resources there.
And I'll say one of the big, I feel like motivating factors behind a lot of people who are similar to me in personality, maybe similar to you in personality. If you think you're not going to be funny anymore on the other side of this, or creative, or as interesting, or as charming, that has been proven to be patently untrue.
Yep. So that's one of the fibs we tell ourselves for sure.
That's one of the things we tell ourselves so that we can keep doing. I get my best ideas when I'm drinking. And the smoothest at talking to women when I've had a couple of drinks. I'm the best at what we convince ourselves that we have reasons that we need to do this. But I promise you, I bet you're just as funny, if not funnier. Your work ethic is certainly better. Like, just something to think about. If that's the thing that's holding you back, you think it's some facet of your personality, or if you think it's why some people like you. And it might be why some of the same users like you, and they will dislike you because it'll be a reflection on them when you quit or whatever. But don't take that as judgment. You know, don't worry. If you want to get out of what you're doing, just fucking go for it. You'll be a better person on the other side. I promise.
That's the truth.
You're not a worse person for doing it now. But
you will be. Yeah. If that's one of the fibs you're telling yourself that holds you back, I couldn't agree more. Artists in general, trust me, the perspective you gained on the other side is worth, yeah, 100 times more than what it was when you're needy.
Exactly. Now. Exactly. Yes. Thank you, Murph. That's a good call. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Your perspective, you're stronger because now you've got both points of view. You've been there,
yeah,
done that, as we, as, yep, us old people say, as us old heads say.
Yeah. 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 All right, kids. Yeah. Yeah. The old heads are philosophizing over here. Yeah.
Well, we get it. Next time one of us is on the other one's coast, let's eat a couple of caps and high five in the stars, brother.
Yes, I love that so much.
Guys, as always, I'm at Gabrison on social media. At Gabrison on social media. Follow Murph. Follow me. Check out selfmedicatedpod.com. All the details will be Murph's tagged in this tweet or the Instagram that you got this post from. Check out Action Boys, actionboys.biz on Patreon. And then also the Gino Lombardo Show is now on Stitcher Premium. Promo code Gino gets you one free month. Check it out there. Season 2 is airing now. Enjoy. Bye, shitheads. I am mighty.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room with them.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!